My guest at this time is Bob Tufts. He's a former Major League Baseball pitcher and a former Wall Street executive. He now teaches at Yeshiva University in New York and is an outspoken patient advocate. He is also co-founder of My Life is Worth It. He joins us today to share his battle both with cancer and the healthcare system and how today's cost-cutting focus is needlessly endangering lives. And Bob, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
As is often the case, many of us don't see the flaws and frustrations within the healthcare system until we or someone we love has to go through it. What was the medical crisis that introduced you to the problems we're talking about today?
In my case, it was odd. I was healthy my whole life. I would say from playing baseball to working on Wall Street, I didn't miss a day work in, 30 years. And then finally, I started getting these small colds. I wrote them off to taking my daughter for, college trips and what have you. And I finally said, this is weird. I've got to go to my local doctor. My local doctor said, you're exhibiting traits that you'd see in a 74-year-old, not a 54-year-old. Once your cold is done, come back and let's do an extra test. Something, as Ezekiel Manuel probably said, was unnecessary. But in my case, it caught cancer just in time, multiple myeloma, a bone marrow-related cancer. And thanks to that, and that's because I was in a high-risk moment at that point due to the way my disease was progressing, that caught in time. The medicines I got, the novel therapies worked, and I was able to basically be fully functional within almost about 9 months.
And so your doctor was on top of not only your symptoms, but the effective therapies that were available. How common is that? Are most doctors doing that extra test nowadays, or is that something that is frustratingly rare?
They're getting scared to do it, too, because many doctors have now been forced, due to the cost of electronic health records and all the government mandates, into hospital systems. And the more you're into a hospital system, they will overregulate what the doctor can and cannot do. In my case, it was my primary care physician who had treated my mother-in-law, my wife, my daughter, and I, who was able to, through his art of medicine, not just the random science of creating some sort of statistical model, see something was wrong and get me that care. We still need the personal delivered. We need medicine to remain an art, not just a science which treats people to an average. Because if you ask for average care, you're going to get average care. And being a cancer patient, we need novel therapies. We need to raise the bar every day to raise the mean. Everyone in the entire medical supply chain should be doing that to get better results for tomorrow, to be innovative.
When you talk about novel therapies, it sounds good for patients, and there are certainly doctors, if they're not on the cutting edge, they would probably like to be. But when it comes to the people who pay the bills, novel therapies are sometimes things that they don't like to see and they're not willing to pay for. So what was your experience then with your insurance company, and what did you subsequently learn about how often insurers are getting in the way of some of these novel therapies?
I was very fortunate in my case, but then again, my premiums were sky high, so I guess I was paying almost for everything through my premiums being very high. But in dealing with other cancer patients and going to other patient advocates and meetings, you found out how other people were being basically denied care by step therapy or fail first. You had to take the older, cheaper medicine for at least 30 to 60 days before they would allow you to try another medication. I have a dear friend who they did that to, who had terrible neuropathy, who the insurance company made go through the hell of pain for 30 days before they gave him the med. What was the cost difference? $4. Over $4, they made a man suffer. The step therapy is bad. Not having oral parity in payments, making people go to the hospital to have the liquid transfusions, as opposed to, in my case, being able to take a pill at home. The cost out of pocket of going to hospitals twice a week for a transfusion versus taking a pill every day. Those two things basically really got me going and found out that I was very fortunate compared to many other cancer or rare disease patients.
We talked about the doctors in a different light a minute ago, but in terms of where they're feeling the pressure from, is it mainly from the insurers? Is it from within the medical community because costs are so high now and folks are focusing on trying to keep them down? Where does most of the pressure come from?
It comes from insurance companies, number one, because I've seen personally, my oncologist have to get on the phone and in my early stage of treatment, spend 15 to 20 minutes arguing with an insurance company that this person needs this treatment, this is what I recommend, this is a standard of care, and having the hem and hawing and seeing the time wasted by my doctor basically having to beg for me to get the care that would keep me alive. That was the biggest thing. And within hospitals, you see the same kind of things happen. You know, we create a bureaucracy, and what does a bureaucracy do? It feeds upon itself. It creates more layers and makes it more confusing for patients and anyone who enters this Byzantine system.
When it comes to availability of the treatment, I'm guessing that if the insurance company ultimately refuses to go along, it then comes down to what you can afford to pay out of pocket. Some people might be in a position to do that for a little while. Some people may be fortunate enough to do that for a longer while, but other people may not have that option. So then what?
Then actually, believe it or not, pharmaceutical companies are not the evil of the world. It's wonderful to take anything that is for that makes profits, insurance companies also, and turn them into the ultimate villain. But it turns out that in my case, for my medication, almost 90% of patients were able to get it easily enough. And in the cases that didn't, there were programs that pharmaceutical companies ran to get them those drugs at almost a zero cost. 90% of people were getting the drugs with co-payments of $0 to $100 per round of treatment, per monthly treatment.
Right now, of course, there's a big debate about what direction our healthcare ought to go in, more free market, more government intervention, and perhaps government control. You've made the point that the novel therapies that you've gotten are possible in this country, but would not have been possible in more government-oriented healthcare systems like Great Britain. Explain why.
The world free rides off our back of innovation. We produce two-thirds to three-quarters of all the drugs, and the other countries put on caps and basically almost deny people the drugs. In my case, when I was diagnosed, my drug was just approved for off-label use in the United States. It was not approved in the UK, and frankly, for frontline use, it was not approved until much later. And considering the way my cancer was high risk, by the time that I had begged, borrowed, and done whatever to try to get this drug and maybe used other ones which were harsher, I probably would have been dead under the NHS system and NICE system and the use of quality-adjusted life years to basically devalue the sick and deny us care.
Is the pressure to reduce costs and insurance companies to deny payment for certain therapies, has that become worse under the Affordable Care Act, or is there just an inertia that's been going on for a long time that's making it worse?
Tough to say, but as we have, unfortunately, more and more government use and control of healthcare, it becomes a budgetary issue, as we are seeing in many of the debates going on. The more the government controls, the more it's on a budget line, and people start thinking about what that number is on that line and look at people as little pixels on a chart, not as humans basically trying to fight to survive. I mean, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Let's start with life first and basically deal with these other problems through innovation. We have basically made massive strides. Think of the HIV programs in the early 90s. There were articles in the Washington Post, New York Times, saying our healthcare system cannot cope with HIV costs. The medical costs are unsustainable. They were wrong then, and they're wrong now, thanks to what innovation can do and will do.
So what are the solutions? How do we get on the right track to advocate for greater therapies, coverage of those things, and to spark the innovation needed to address any number of healthcare problems?
We basically have to put everyone in a room and knock heads, to be honest, as opposed to doing a lot of posturing. Quite frankly, most of the back and forth is very unproductive and only maintains a status quo. And if I had my druthers, I think back to when I was young. You went to the doctor, you paid cash, you basically had a major medical policy. Why can't we devolve something into paying some sort of small fee to our doctor per month to cover our basics and have a major medical slash pharmaceutical coverage and strip away the pharmacy benefit managers from in between, strip away all these layers and let the doctors practice the art of medicine and the science of medicine as opposed to spending $50,000 a practice filling out these forms. And it drives me crazy, even though I love my oncologist. Of our 15 minutes together, over half is spent looking at the computer, entering code so he can be paid appropriately. That's nonsense and a waste of time and money.
A lot of people frustrated by that, and it's even forcing some good doctors to go out of business because of the costs associated with following all those different requirements. So, Bob, for those folks who are either in a difficult medical situation or want to know what to do if they find themselves or a loved one in it, what's the best way to advocate for yourself, and what would you like folks to know about your organization, My Life is Worth It?
Well, for the individual to advocate, there's kind of, once you're diagnosed and you get into the system, particularly in any rare disease, which myeloma is, you try to get to a teaching hospital. The teaching hospitals have doctors who actually work with industry. But working with industry means they're involved. They know every medicine coming down the pipe. And in my case, I'm on a clinical trial right now. My doctor, knowing the companies, knew a clinical trial was there and got me on it. Number two, you basically keep a diary and list because we're down to these 15 minutes of information with our doctor. You have your questions. You come in prepared. And number three, don't take anything that anyone tells you, from, you know, antioxidants to whatever vitamins. Clear everything with your doctor so you're basically a clean slate and we can find out if the medicine's working or you're blocking absorption. As for My Life Is Worth It, I'm in the process of spinning it off from another not-for-profit to tell more of the patient narrative. Because as we saw in the last battle over the healthcare, the patient voice is strong. And when the patient voice is put together, the patient's voice actually can affect politics and policy. In an ideal world, I would love the next group to come through to have patients advocate to have patients and doctors in those rooms. No backdoor deals which don't include actual patients and practicing physicians, because that is where true value in healthcare occurs, at that intersection. It doesn't care through an abacus app or some sort of program designed by a master in public health. It happens in that room at bedside. And we want doctors and patients in the room because that is where the decision is made by the people who are informed, not by a bureaucrat 100,000 miles away.
Well, Bob, it's certainly a frustrating issue. I know it has been for you and for many, many other Americans. We wish you the very best in your own healthcare challenges, and we wish you the best of luck with your efforts to educate other patients and to change the system for the better. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Bob Tufts, former Major League Baseball pitcher and former Wall Street executive. He now teaches at Yeshiva University in New York. He's an outspoken patient advocate and is co-founder of My Life Is Worth It. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.